My guest on this edition of the Mouthcast was born in Cardiff in 1948 and began performing in the late 1960s, though it was in the 1980s that he first saw commercial success. In the UK alone, he scored over 30 top 40 hit singles, including four number ones.
www.themouthmagazine.com.
He's about to release a new album, his 12th studio album, the surprisingly rootsy Echoes of Our Times. Before we talk, it would be somewhat disingenuous not to acknowledge his success in the 1980s. So let's listen to the 1981 UK number one, This Old House, by Shakin' Stevens.
This old house wants new children. This old house wants new wife. This old house was home of comfort as we fought the storm light. This old house once rang with laughter. This old house heard many shouts. Now she trembles in the dark and that's the way the light in the world's louder.
Ain't gonna leave this house no longer. Ain't gonna leave this house no more.
Ain't got time to fix the shingles. Ain't got time to fix the floor. Ain't got time on the hinges. No two men know when to paint. Ain't gonna need this house no longer. She's a get ready to be the same. This old house is getting shaky. This old house is getting old. This old house lets in the rain. And this old house lets in the cold. On my knees I'm getting chilled. But I feel no pain. As I see an angel peeking through the broken window pane.
Ain't gonna leave this house no longer. Ain't gonna leave this house no more.
Ain't got time to fix the shingles. Ain't got time.
Shakin' Stevens, welcome to the Mouthcast. How are you, sir?
Hi, Steve. I'm fine, thank you.
Excellent. It's an exciting time for you. Your new album, Echoes of Our Times, it's a record which is likely to surprise some people. It's an often poignant look back at your family roots, the stories of your ancestors, in fact. There are tales of poverty, the struggle to survive, there's war stories, all sorts of really interesting stuff. Did this idea for this record come out of a natural interest in your genealogy?
Well, you come to a stage in your life when you realise you know nothing about your family, and the stories started to present themselves while I was recording the new album. We stopped recording and started writing the stories to inspire the new songs, basically.
Were there things that you discovered which surprised you?
Oh, yes, there were, yeah. I mean, down in the hole, for instance, didn't really know my grandfather. Well, my grandfather was born in 1865 and was a copper miner. At the age of 10, And we didn't know things like this. We didn't know that there was ancestors that went down the mines in Cornwall.
Did you just say 10?
He was 10 when he was down the mine, yeah. I mean, the thing is, when we discovered this, you have to remember that the mines I'm talking about is vertical. So they go down, 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 down. And they went under sea as well. So obviously there was lots of floods there. I mean, the conditions down there was horrific. They basically, at 8-hour, 12-hour day, take them 2 hours to climb down on these ladders and then do, as I say, 8 or 12 hours and then back up the ladder. And, of course, sometimes the ladder will give way and they go back down the hole and obviously kill themselves. Structure would come away. We saw these photographs of the mines. Unbelievable. It's just struts and slats and pieces of wood holding rock up. You know, it's amazing. Of course, there was poison in the air as well. There was women and children down there as well. And a candle as well. That's all they had on just candles. So they work in the darkness. There was no toilets down there and horrific stuff. And of course, they didn't live that long either. I think 25, 30 and 35, that was it. So the inspiration came, my family, they were copper tin miners for many, 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 many years. And, you know, the song came about that, and we wrote the song about that. It was a very close thing to do. It's part of me, it's part of the family.
Yeah. Just on that point, the conditions that they worked in, that's absolutely incredible. I was in Belfast earlier this week, down on the slipways where they built the Titanic.
Yeah.
And the tour guide was telling us that elevators, lifts, to get to the top of the framework that they built around the ship, if you like, that they built the ship within this framework, the workers didn't trust lifts. So they would climb up hundreds of feet with no ropes or anything. No, it's incredible to think how all of that's changed, isn't it, over the years.
It's different times, isn't it?
Yeah.
Different times completely. Totally different what it is now. Totally different.
I suppose, like in all families, quite often the finer details are lost to time, really. Like, for instance, I know my grandfather was part of the D-Day landings, and I know where he was stationed after that, but I don't know anything else about that. It's too late to ask him now. I guess you have to be appreciative of the fact that these stories don't actually live on unless someone makes the effort to set them down somewhere.
That's right. Well, my dad, basically, he wouldn't... when I was growing up, he wouldn't talk about what went on. He fought in the First World War and went out there with his three brothers, and they came back, which is very, very unusual.
Yeah.
But he didn't like to talk about the war at all. He just didn't, really. I mean, the conditions were terrible. The gas, the rats and the trenches, it was horrible. My Leonard Venables, who was the son of my mother's mother, he was a gunner. He joined the Royal Field Artillery. He was in there for 4 years, and he died on 15th of January, 1918. But he was blown up, and it took him 8 days to die. Terrible.
Yeah.
His son was born 11 days later. They are horrific stories.
Yeah.
So hence, with that and other stories, came the Echoes of Our Times.
How long did it take you to research this stuff, and when did you get to the point where you thought, okay, I know enough to do these people justice?
We started before we started recording. It was a long process. It was a long process. I mean, I'm sure that we could have found more, but we did want to suffer little children because, well, so children have been suffering for many, 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 many years. You know, go back as far as you want, really. And it's still going on today, and we just hope it'll stop. Fingers crossed, legs, everything, really. Yeah. Train of Time, that was about, you know, whether you're rich or poor, you know, we're all going to go one day. So that was the story behind that. Last Man Alive was... man ruining the planet, really, destroying the planet, and the world is saying, okay, this is what you're doing, cop this, here's the ice that's all going to melt, here's the water that's going to flood, the pollution and everything else. So
obviously, to have written a song about that subject, you must be interested in it, concerned about stuff. But is that something that you're active in, if you like?
Well, that one, that was written by two friends of ours. I first heard the demo and I liked it so much. There was a good message there, and hence, you know, it fits into the album, basically, because there's family and other things that's happening within the world with Suffer and Train of Time, Time Going So Fast, and Love the World.
Interestingly, you were one of 13 children.
Yeah.
You were, so your parents were obviously quite busy there, particularly your mum, I would think.
No TV, I guess.
you were born in Cardiff. Now, I spent quite a bit of time there about a decade ago, and I really loved the place. It felt like a bit of a boom town, actually. But how different is it now to the Cardiff that you knew growing up in the 50s and 60s?
Totally different, basically. There's a lot more motorways. When I used to travel from Cardiff up to London, when I was in the band, just starting out, in our tin van.
Yeah.
it used to take us a very long time. We used to go the Chepstow route.
Right, okay.
Three or four hours, I think. But it's changed a lot, really. I mean, the town centre has completely changed. I mean, Bute Street, Tiger Bay, it's all different. And I guess, you know, for the best, really. They've moved on, and there's better facilities there and everything else. So different times, I guess, when I was growing up. So it has changed, yeah, in a big way.
Well, what was the scene for you back in the 50s and 60s? Were there a lot of clubs that you'd go to, or live music venues, those sort of things?
Well, I basically, from a very, very early age, I just wanted to sing. And when we used to have weddings and things like that, all the brothers used to, we all seemed to be gifted with our vocal cords, because everybody would get up and sing their favourite or whatever, you know.
We attempted to form a 13-piece choir.
I basically was, when I was in school, I used to sing, and when I left school, and I was just interested in music anyway, didn't know anything about. Because my parents were from a poor family. They never had the opportunities, but they were happy. We had food and that. But when I left school, I just basically wanted to go into a band, and that's what I did.
On that point, really, eventually you had a run of singles around 81, 82, which probably set the template in some ways, if you like. This Old House, I really remember that song. But I want to look back at a little period just before this. I was lucky enough to go see the stage show Elvis in London in, I think it would have been 78 or 79.
Yeah, that's something like
and,
that.
And you were one of the performers playing Elvis at some stage of his career. I remember thinking that this guy has nailed it. He's fantastic. Elvis was obviously an influence on you, but that stage show actually suggests that your career could have gone in a very different direction.
Mm. Well, you know, we were basically on the road and it was coming to an end, and Jack Good came down to the Greyhound in London and offered me the part. I had no money. I wasn't sure at first, but then I accepted the part. It ran for 19 months, and it won a musical award, and I enjoyed it. I really did, yeah. I actually put my own bit into it, really. I think we had Carl Perkins came to see the show, Susan George. I mean, there's a list of people that came to see the show, and they all loved it, you know, and it was packed every night. I was a bit more wild, I guess, than Elvis, you know. I mean, I used to jump up the stage and walk... stand on the seats, you know, and do some crazy things, you know.
But I suppose,
but there you go. It was different, you know.
Yeah, But I suppose in your own way there, what you were doing was kind of pushing it a little bit beyond what was expected, you know, as Elvis did in the 50s. He was kind of pushing it, wasn't he? And
I'm talking about running down the aisle. Talking about running down the aisles and standing on the seats and walking over people, not actually their heads, but, you know, on their seats. It was quite wild what I was doing, you know. Well, I guess if you ask me, Elvis was, he was great in the 50s, wasn't he? I mean, who didn't like Elvis, you know? I mean, people from Bruce Springsteen, you know, there's a list as long as the M bloody one.
Yeah.
But he went a bit flat, I guess, in the 60s and changed his style in the latter. He made some great songs in the latter. But it was a shame he didn't come out and perform in Europe. But I guess that was down to his manager.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think Elvis might be doing now if he was still alive?
I don't know. Somebody told me there was a record of it. He was in the fish shop.
Yeah.
Who knows? He might have gone somewhere else now. Who knows?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you were around 30 when you started having hits.
I was, yeah. Well, we didn't get the opportunities then like we get today.
Well, that is traditionally quite late. So I wondered whether at that stage, just before those records, you thought that maybe the chance had gone.
I guess so, but you only get what you put in, really. Keep going, and you can't do it by yourself, really. You know, it's nice to find the right people that can help you along that road. If you don't find them, there can be some ones that don't give a shit, basically.
You were born as Michael Barrett.
Correct.
But because of that theatrical element, the Elvis show, and the kind of larger-than-life image of Shaky that's been projected...
Oh, the Shaky and Stevens had nothing to do with the West End musical.
Yeah.
So that came long before that.
But the kind of larger-than-life image of Shaky that's been projected over the years, I wondered, you know, if Shaky and Stevens
What larger-than-life image is it?
Well, what I'm getting at is I wondered if Shaking Stevens is a sort of character that you slip on for performance, you know, and whether Michael Barrett is actually a very private man.
You know, the name Shaking Stevens, it's basically, it's a name that's like Lazy Lester, Muddy Waters, Sting and Bono. It's just a wacky name, basically, but it didn't do me any harm, so there you go.
Yeah, but...
Are you saying, do I put my cloak on and I turn into this person?
Yes, I am
no,
saying
I
that.
No, I don't.
Actually.
No. Yeah. No, not at all.
Because I did wonder, you know, that happens, doesn't it, that people develop their character to kind of protect the real person.
No, I just go on as me, basically, and perform how I perform.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the fame that came your way,
yeah.
I mean, it's staggering, actually, the amount of records that you sold, the number of hits you've had. I've often wondered this about you, the credibility angle, if you like. Do you ever think you got your dues there? Do you ever think that you got what you deserved? Did that ever really matter, if you like, that Shaking Stevens was popular, but probably to a lot of people...
Where is he now? Is that what you're trying to say?
No, I'm trying to say he was popular to a lot of people, but he probably wasn't cool.
Well, I guess, you know, in everyone's career, they need to change as they go along. And I change, basically, in my live performance quite a lot, actually. I've got this album coming out now, and the people that see me live, they've never seen and heard that I don't do 80 shows or anything like that. I've moved on, and the Now Listen album that I brought out, that was a bridge album for me. I was very pleased with that. And this album is different again, but it's more personal because it's family. So a lot of people will be surprised that haven't heard it, and people who have heard it, they really love it, and they can relate to it. Musos will relate to it because of the instruments that are on there, and, you know, I've used these instruments on stage many years now. It's my kind of move on stage, I guess, the album, but I've certainly moved on with my live work, so there you go.
I was going to ask you about the sound of the record, actually. It is really interesting because by searching out the roots of your family, I guess to tell those stories or to sympathetically tell those stories, you were almost obliged to use a rootsy context. So the record is, there are moments of folk, there's swamp blues, a bit of Cajun. It sounds great, but there's stuff in there which I don't think too many people would actually associate with the name Shakin' Stevens.
The guys that I've used for many years have always had great musicians around me. The guy that plays trumpet, you know, he's played with Van Morrison for many years. The harmonica player, he plays piano, he plays flute. The guitarist, he plays bottleneck guitar, he plays mandolin and all that stuff. And we've been doing this for yonks.
Yeah. The price of being as successful as you were back in the 80s, let's say, in the kind of huge... I mean, you were everywhere. You were on TV all the time and magazines and stuff. Was there a kind of pressure there? Was there a price to pay for you for that attention, if you like?
Well, I think the manager I had at the time, you know, it was the wrong one. There wasn't a lot of TVs around in there those early days. It was just basically Saturday morning shows and Top of the Pops, and that was it, really. And you had to take what you could get, really, and that was it.
Yeah.
But, yes, there was a lot of pressure. I mean, because I was here, there and everywhere. You know, I was doing tours throughout Europe, Australia, and all over the place, really, and lots of interviews, et cetera, et cetera. So, yes, there was a pressure, quite a bit of pressure.
Okay, I have to ask you about this. It's one of my favourite TV clips, actually.
I know what you're going to say.
Yeah.
Richard Bentley.
Yeah, this sort of...
You've been looking on the internet, haven't you, naughty boy?
This unexpected moment where you tackle Richard Madeley on live TV. What was going on? Did you just feel?
Well, basically, like... I was doing a radio tour thing, and basically, there was a TV book within the radio promotion, and I got there about early in the morning, and they had camera problems, and finally got on the set about, I don't know, 1 o'clock, something like that. And the researcher, I don't think she did he did the research properly. And, you know, it just went a bit of fun, really. Yeah. It was just a bit of fun, you know, and that was it, you know. Good job we didn't get Jerry Lee Lewis, wasn't it?
I just wondered if, like most of us, you felt it was time someone took Richard Madeley out.
No, it was a bit of fun. He was always, you know, I've seen Richard, I don't know, a couple of years back. He said, what a prat I was. I said, well, I'm, you said it, not me.
No, it was great. Anyway, all the best for the new album. As I said at the start, I think it's a record which may challenge a few preconceptions about you. But have you any idea what might be next for you after this particular project?
Well, they're putting the tour together. I think it's May, June, something like that. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm very pleased with the record. It's very personal to me. And as I said, a lot of people that have seen me on tour, these instruments that you talk about, they've seen and heard them many times. So instrument-wise, there's nothing different at all. My music, really, as I moved on, has got rootsy anyway. So I'm very pleased with the album. People will love it because they can relate to the stories, and I love it because it's close to me. Very pleased with it, with everything, basically, especially the music business. You need a bit of luck. Let's hope that comes along.
Shakin' Stevens, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Steve.
Cause I'm
www.themouthmagazine.com.